On By Design, you are listening to Radio National. Now, most of us would say that it is our families and friends that is most important to us. I know I would, because we're social animals and our relationships are vital. A new report, Social Cities, from the Grattan Institute, argues that a city without people has little meaning. It's an empty collection of roads and buildings. It says that although we've made progress making our cities more productive and sustainable, we are failing to understand what makes us social. People and how we interact is essential to shaping our cities and towns. I'm joined in the conversation today by one of Australia's best-known economists and a partner at Deloitte Access Economics, Professor Ian Harper. Welcome to By Design.
Good afternoon, Fenella.
Good to have you here. Now, the report has just been released and you've got the job of launching it. So to start with, what's your response to the Social Cities report?
I think it's a very interesting take on an important set of issues. I'm not familiar with that sort of research directly. I'm an economist, and we often talk about cities from an economics perspective. And to have a report which takes a very different and much broader view of cities, as you say, as collections of people, really puts a fresh perspective on it for me.
Okay, so the role of economics in this discussion is very important. So what then do you think is the link between design and economics?
Well, economists think, particularly in the context of cities, Fenella, about productivity growth. And we look to cities as devices for facilitating human connection, where the end in view is material gain, if you like, places where human beings exchange goods and services and trade. Mm-hmm. We tend not to think about the broader social, psychological or spiritual value of people interacting. And I think what this report does is very helpfully, not just to remind us of something that might seem obvious, but to present some systematic evidence about how that works.
So beyond simply the idea of a city as being about transactions and about material gains, I mean, what is your definition of a successful city?
I think a successful city is really a fountain of human welfare. It's a device which is there to promote not just the material flourishing of human beings, but the flourishing of human beings in all of the dimensions, as I say, spiritual and psychological included.
Okay, so the bigger the city, does it mean that we have a better lifestyle? For example, having more money, does that equal that?
Well, it does. Generally speaking, cities are generate much greater wealth than the surrounding areas. So we need to be careful, of course, because there are lots of cities in the world that people would immediately think of as being, if you like, sinks of poverty. Mm. But people tend to forget that relative to the areas that surround them, they are still wealthy. I mean, it's traditionally the case in all economic development that people move from the country to the city. And they do that not necessarily in search of a more idyllic lifestyle, for now, or at least not in the first instance, but generally speaking, in search of improved material welfare.
And this is something economists call high human capital, is that right?
Yes, economists use the term human capital to refer to skill, generally speaking, that those things that come that actually add to the productive value of human labour. We tend to still focus on the individual capacity rather than thinking about the relationships that exist between human beings and how that might actually increase, well, their economic effectiveness, let alone anything else. And I think what this report does is to further open the window on an area that economists have been forced by events and changing trends to take more seriously than I think we have traditionally done.
One area that you have taken quite seriously and you've considered is a bit of work that you've done for the City of Melbourne on Collins Street, Ian, where you discovered areas of how good design and planning can encourage better communication and connectedness. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I can. We were asked by the City of Melbourne to look into the clustering of financial services in the City of Melbourne. And clustering is one of those phenomena we observe in cities in particular, where you can get observable improvements in productivity by activities being closely located to one another. In this instance, we're looking at financial services, which are high value-added services, and of course the city's keen to try to build Melbourne's reputation as a centre for financial services, and one of the inputs is this clustering thing. So anyway, we discovered that the financial services centre in Melbourne is actually in an L shape, running the length of Collins Street, as you say, right down, of course, into the Docklands, where a couple of very large banks are, and then up along Exhibition Street down to where the funds managers tend to locate down in Castleton Place. And in talking to people as part of that project, Fenella, to get a sense, you know, to answer to the simple question, why are you located in this particular configuration? It was remarkable to have people who would, you'd normally think, are pretty hard-nosed financial market types talking about the importance of being together, of being able to go downstairs and have a coffee, meet one another on the tram.
Happy financiers.
Well, indeed. Happy financial campers, absolutely. And the more one looked into that, the more one realised there was more than just happiness. There's actually money to be made.
Money to be made in this. Would it work in other areas? I mean, for example, if all the doctors were on one street in Collins Street in Melbourne?
Melbourne often thinks of itself as a city which facilitates clustering at various levels. And, for example, we have a very strong medical research precinct which interrelates to the medical facilities, to the hospitals themselves, the universities and the medical practitioners. And I think people wouldn't be surprised to discover that there are always, you know, medical specialists in defined areas. It's that's something which sort of comes naturally. Mm. But it's more than them being able to enjoy one another's company. They're actually delivering better patient care in that context. And the fact that, for example, public hospitals have private hospitals next to them oftentimes is a way of ensuring that you get this proper mixing of skill from both sides and ultimately in the interests of patient care.
Good examples of clustering. On By Design, I'm joined by Professor Ian Harper. He's one of Australia's best-known economists, and we're getting some of his perspectives about a new report from the Grattan Institute called Social Cities, and we would love to hear your thoughts as well, so do get in touch on our website. Ian, could we talk a bit about well-being and happiness? It's become a matter for statistical accounting, But this means different things to different people, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does, Fenella. And I think that, as I said earlier on, that my profession has been forced to think beyond material welfare into those other dimensions that constitute welfare or flourishing for human beings more generally, particularly as we've gotten wealthier and people recognise that, the old biblical expression that, you know, human beings don't live by bread alone, I guess, comes to mind, that there's a lot to do with our lifestyles that go beyond the material. And economists have been forced to start thinking about this. So much so that now, as people might be aware, there are indices of human welfare that extend beyond the narrower economic measures like GDP per capita that the United Nations and the OECD and others produce in all seriousness, seeking to track how well we are fulfilling basic human needs, as well as simply material prosperity.
And is this called the Gross National Happiness Index? Is that correct?
Well, there are different names. The United Nations calls it the Human Development Index, but
there are different ways
sure.
of putting
well,
it.
In fact, in Brunei is the only country that I'm aware of where the official sector actually targets a measure of happiness. I'm not quite sure what they call it, but you're right. But it is a broader measure than
there is a broader measure. Somebody like Noel Pearson, for example, who's talked quite extensively about this, he's talked about those who consistently fall outside the parameters of, you could call it gross national happiness or something like that. Why is what he teaches us important?
Oh, well, Noel, of course, there's a particular challenge, as we'd all would be aware, in the development of our Indigenous brothers and sisters here in Australia, and the problem is right on our doorstep. And I think that Noel is acutely aware that attempts over the decades to try to deal with, you know, what the rest of us have thought of as purely a material issue hasn't just assisted, in some cases, or not assisted, I should say, it's actually retarded the development of our Aboriginal citizens at the same time. And he's thinking and writing very provocatively about ways in which you can build community within Aboriginal Australia in ways that go much beyond the material. It's not to deny the importance of material welfare, of course, but it's to say, you know, in the end, how do we make these communities work? And Noel has a lovely expression that he actually quotes from the Nobel Prize-winning economist A.K. Sen, who says that, you know, what's important is that we build these communities so that people can lead lives they have reason to value. It's a lovely term.
It is lovely.
And what it means is that there, you see, there's the choice you mentioned a moment ago, Fenella, that happiness means different things to different people. Well, absolutely. So how could we have an objective that would capture that? Well, this notion of Sen's, that we want to have people be able to lead lives that they have reason to value, opens up all of this territory well and truly beyond the material.
I mean, this is costly in some ways. I mean, improving social connection is very important, but who pays for these sorts of things? Who pays for urban redevelopment? Is it private? Is it public?
Well, usually it's been a mixture of the two. As far as economists are concerned, there are elements of it which are, as we describe them, public goods. That is to say, they're things that we know are of importance and value to human beings, but because you can't actually capture the value yourself, it can't be sold on the market, and typically, of course, it gets underprovided. So things like urban planning, obviously, and urban design to some extent, are within the public domain, but so also is the private domain. You know, who designs buildings and how they're designed, oftentimes, of course, extends well into the private sector. So I think the answer to that, Finola, is it's a mixture of the two. Trying to get that balance right is often difficult, and normally economists would say, let the public sector decide, if you like, what the rules of the game are, and then police those rules, and let the private sector get on with playing the game. It's not always easy to divide it quite so simply in this context.
Certainly. Well, the Social Cities Report, you launched it this week. What are the next steps from here, very quickly? Where to now? We have these ideas, but we struggle to implement them.
I think the important thing is gaining the attention of the authorities. And one of the reasons that I've been asked to be involved with Jane Frances Kelly and her colleagues at Grattan is to try to help present these notions in a way that my colleagues within treasuries and within economic analysis outfits can think, oh, OK, I understand what you mean.
Ian, thank you so much for joining us. Professor Ian Harper, of course, talking to us here on By Design. And links to Social Cities, the report from the Grattan Institute, is on our website. And we've also recorded a conversation between Grattan Institute's Jane Frances Kelly, Professor Ian Harper, also hosted by Peter Mayers, well known to you Radio National listeners. And we're going to be broadcasting this conversation on By Design later this year. And that's By Design for today. We look forward to your thoughts and comments. You can email us or you can visit our Facebook page. Love to see you there. By Design is produced by Jan Ryan. Our sound engineer is John Diamond. And I'm Finola Kernebone.